shared primary care is a way of paying for primary care medicine that eliminates the interaction between the patient and the physician and insurance companies. Patients don't pay per visit, typically, though sometimes there's a small copay depending on the practice. But primarily they pay with a subscription fee, typically every month or every year, so that they have an ongoing relationship with the physician that allows far more flexibility in how the physician and the patient can meet the patient's needs.
Mm-hmm. How long have you taken up this this direct primary care option as part of your practice, as opposed to, I'm sure, many, many years before of just being in the traditional way?
Well, I've been doing this for 2.5 years now, and honestly, I did it, and I spoke with it about a number of people, and had a presence on Facebook, as I suppose everybody does. And it's only been recently with publication of a couple of articles in Northwest Indiana Times that enough people became familiar with it that I've encountered a great deal of enthusiasm. And I also think that not only is this a good time in my life, but it's a good time in, you know, the history of the healthcare industry to look at alternatives to insurance involvement with every transaction.
Tell us how this opportunity that you have to go with this rather, at least what seems to be, unconventional way of offering a help for your patients, as well as for them, I guess, to basically to pay for their needs in health care. How does this have had an impact over time, certainly with your practice, and what do you do differently now that you didn't do before with just the conventional method?
Well, the way you run a direct primary care is very much different than running a typical fee-for-service practice. In a fee-for-service practice, for the greatest part, the only activity that generates revenue for the practice is when the patient comes in and has a traditional office visit. And what I found to be the problem with that was that everything that the practice did that was not an office visit, that did not generate revenue, and just through, you know, natural forces, was not a priority. And in a lot of cases, was not done as well as people would like. You know, an example is if you speak with patients about how difficult it is to get a prescription refilled. And you'll hear very many stories about patients who call and say, you know, I called the office, you know, 2-3 times, and I still can't get my prescription refilled. Well, you know, the problem is that when you have a primary care clinician who has to see 20 or 25 patients a day and respond to all sorts of urgent needs, you know, refilling a prescription doesn't generate any revenue for the practice, and gets pushed to the bottom of the pile.
Mm-hmm.
And in my practice, everything that helps the patient is equally important, because I don't get paid for one particular activity over another. I, frankly, get paid for having a relationship and devising ways to meet the patient's needs.
Would you say that the way that you do things now with your practice is similar or very different from we'll say the really old way? I mean, we're talking like back in the 50s and 60s when there were a lot more doctors, a lot smaller offices and smaller practices, where you were doing a more personal contact with your patients.
I think it has some similarities to the old ways of doing practice. Primary care medicine was for a very long time a largely cash business.
Mm-hmm.
And what changed about that is Insurance changed. The nature of insurance benefits changed. Also, frankly, the practice of medicine changed, and the current fee-for-service payment system was really devised to meet the needs of a medical care industry that was treating acute and often very significant illnesses like appendicitis or pneumonia. Now, 75% of medical care is the treatment of chronic illnesses. And the economic model, which does a fine job of taking care of an appendectomy, does a very poor job of taking care of a problem which somebody needs constant care and constant monitoring over a term of years or decades.
Not like diabetes, for example.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And diabetes has become much more prevalent. Hypertension, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. This is the bread and butter, frankly, of primary care now. And the idea that you're going to pay for, you know, each encounter for a problem which benefits from frequent but not, you know, terribly resource-intensive contacts, mm-hmm, is really misguided. I think it is far more productive to say, I will take care of you. And if you need to come in for an office visit, I'm certainly available, and I'm far more available than in a fee-for-service system because I don't have to see so many patients a day.
Right.
If I can aid you by talking with you on the telephone for 10 minutes, I don't have to worry about whether or not some insurance company is going to decide that speaking on the telephone is worth paying for. I have secure email facilities. And so, you know, if you want to tap out a couple of lines about your treatment, and you know, it doesn't matter whether or not I get back to you at the end of the day, that works as well. Again, insurance companies are just now thinking of ways to reimburse all the different sorts of interactions that we can have with modern technology in the 21st century. And in part, direct primary care gets around it by saying, I'm not going to wait for the insurance companies to decide that what I do and my ideas have value. Mm-hmm. If I think they have value and my patients think they have value, they are valuable.
Well, that's the important thing, the only important thing, I guess, when you think about it, too, isn't it? We're talking with Dr. Tim Ames. He is a family practitioner in Portage. He was doing the typical big service, so to speak, a service as far as being a physician is concerned. But he has decided to go the route of what's called direct primary care and serving the patients a lot better than just being in an office with a lot of other doctors. Tell us a little bit, Dr. Ames, about your particular practice there in Portage. If somebody comes by or wants to come by and talk to you or go in for an exam or whatever the case may be, how do they get in touch with you, and what do they see when they come into the office?
Well, the way they get in touch with me is very many people call me on the phone, and frankly are quite startled when they call my office number and I answer.
Uh-huh.
I am at the point of hiring some staff, and so they won't necessarily get me, but it's not the dense multi-layer phone tree which you encounter at a lot of places. And what I ask them to do typically is to go to my website, which is jtimothyames.com, and as I say, the letter J, timothyames.com. And there's a statement of purpose and also some blog entries and various things. But at the bottom of my statement of purpose, there is a link to a second website where patients can sign up to join the practice and give some of their basic information and provide the payment information which I need. And at that point, either I or a member of my staff reach out to them and get them scheduled for an appointment. I am working in the Porter Stark Services facility in Portage, Indiana. Mm-hmm. One of the things that keeps overhead very low in direct primary care is I don't need a great deal of office space. And I am working out of a modest office and two examining rooms right now, and it works out perfectly fine for trying to get through 20 or 25 patients a day. I couldn't possibly do it.
I can certainly see that. Now, if a patient comes in and you come in for an exam and you recommend they go in for some tests and some other procedures, what happens to those people after that point since you have such a small operation?
Well, in terms of tests, one of the things that I offer is access to laboratory tests at a very highly discounted rate, as long as insurance doesn't need to get involved.
Right.
And so, there are a great many tests that I can offer for a tiny fraction of the rates that people are charged through their insurance. I also am able to provide many people with medication, which I obtain from a wholesaler and dispense from the office, and sometimes the discounts are quite astonishing. I had a patient recently who I first met her, and I had to write her first prescription, and she called back and said, this is over $200.
Wow.
And I was able to obtain it from my wholesaler and furnish it to her for $13.50.
That'd be almost as good as having free samples from the salesman handy, which I know has happened. Of course, doctors get samples from a pharmaceutical salesman and come by and they drop off certain things and they hang on to those. And sometimes, if it's something very simple, you sometimes end up getting like a little bottle with a few pills to see how this is going to work. I suppose it'd be about the same way, wouldn't it?
Well, it's the same, but I've had a great deal of experience with samples down through the years.
Yeah.
And what I finally concluded about samples is that they don't sample the good old-time reliable medicines that I like. There's a great deal that the pharmaceutical industry develops that is revolutionary and changes people's lives. But quite honestly, a lot of what is sampled in physicians' offices are what are referred to as me-too drugs.
Yeah.
The fourth drug of a class, which is no better than the first drug of the class, which is available for, frankly, pennies a day.
Yeah.
And so, right now I don't stock any samples, and I would have to have somebody come and make me a very cogent case as to why those are important.
No, I see. Yeah.
Many direct primary care practices have found that the discounts on medications that patients can get often pays completely for their subscription.
Mm-hmm.
And so, that's a very important benefit. And becoming acquainted with almost an underground, if you will, of people who do medical services for cash at very, very reasonable prices. For instance, I have one vendor that I send patients to for x-rays that has what I consider to be very reasonable charges as long as they don't have to get the insurance companies involved. This is an idea which has been around for a while. It's been growing in popularity, and I'm glad that I could pick up on it.
It's growing in other places in the country. Do you think that, though, it will pick up here in Northwest Indiana?
I think the enthusiasm that I've encountered with this as, a break I'm very grateful for from the Northwest Indiana Times has showed me that once people are exposed to this, and get an explanation of what it is, they understand how it can help them. There's also a great deal of disillusionment with the healthcare insurance industry. I'm running into a number of patients who do not have insurance, which I don't encourage that because, honestly, you know, if somebody has, you know, severe trauma or needs major surgery or something like that, I think there ought to be means to pay for it. But, you know, there they are, and I wish to be of use to everybody. I think also there are a lot of people who have insurance, which in a way keeps them from getting care, because they have insurance, they pay a very costly premium for it, but then before the insurance company writes a single check for their care, they have to go through a very substantial deductible.
Right.
You know, I run into a number of people who say, yes, I have insurance, but no, I cannot afford to go to the doctor because, you know, it's going to cost me so much out of pocket that, you know, I find this insurance a hindrance to care, not a gateway to care.